Well, I'm shocked and deeply saddened that he was such a giant in the legislature.
Even though his overall job approval did, you know, bump up a bit higher, overall, there is more disapproval.
Hi, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we talk politics, national, state, and local. First, I spoke with Blair Horner, the Executive Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, about some sad news on Wednesday. The death, apparently from coronavirus, of longtime New York State Assemblyman Richard Brodsky, a Democrat from Westchester County.
Well, I'm shocked and deeply saddened that he was such a giant in the legislature for so many years. It was hard to imagine the legislature without him, and now it's going to be hard to imagine him about the planet without him. It was very sad and shocking news. He's always had this reputation, well deserved, as being an extremely smart, very capable, knew the details of policy, and hyper aggressive legislator. He was viewed as a bulldog when he was advocating his own issues. And my first interaction with him, at least that I can recall, was back in the 1980s. And he had his reputation then, too, although he's a backbencher in those days. And I was going in to see him on an issue dealing with higher education. And when I went in, it was so funny. There was classical music playing in the background. He asked me if I wanted some hot tea. It was the most relaxed, interesting meeting. And he was, he's well-briefed, knew the issue, extremely articulate, and asked good questions, but the actual feeling in the room was extremely calming, and that wasn't the only time that ever happened with me. But certainly, when he was not in his office, or even sometimes when he was much more of a frantic pace, much more freewheeling, much more willing to engage and debate. He would debate anything, even if you agreed with him. He was a formidable legislator. He's the type of legislator that New Yorkers should want to have at the state capitol.
You know, he ran for attorney general twice, and that might tell us a little bit about where his interests were. It seems like he had a lot of overlap with issues that you care about and your organization cares about in terms of consumer rights, the environment, and things like that.
Yeah, he ran for attorney general twice. I believe the first time when he dropped out, it could have been the second time, he did to donate his kidney to his daughter, and that was why he curbed his campaign. He knew that he was smart. He was, again, a formidable policy person and very aggressive in his advocacy. And so we dealt with him a lot on environmental issues. He was a longtime chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee. And so all things environment would often come his way. But because he had such a broad understanding of issues, he was involved in everything. And so, for example, there's an authorities budget office now that monitors state and local public authorities, these quasi-government entities. And it was really a lot of his advocacy that made that happen. The first time I dealt with him in the 1980s, he was pushing for tighter regulation on proprietary schools, or those are schools where often really like trade schools. And he was involved in a very fierce battle to enhance regulation of those institutions. So he was involved in a lot of issues. He had a curious mind. He was very smart, extremely articulate, and as I mentioned, in case I forgot, aggressive about his perspective.
Did you guys ever knock heads about something?
Well, again, even if you were agreeing with him, sometimes you'd knock heads because that was the way he sort of, I think the way he viewed the world. He was a warrior, and that came out in all different aspects. Now, that's not to say he was always difficult to deal with, although often he was. As I mentioned before, the first meeting I had with him was a relaxed meeting where I was sipping tea, listening to classical music. And so he had this sort of Renaissance part of his personality. He was involved in, I think it was ranching out in Montana as well. So he had this sort of wide-ranging views of issues. He had a very a mind that was curious about a lot of different things. And he was a very effective legislator as a result. He was constantly on the floor debating. He did his homework, and he pushed hard. So, I mean, that's, you know, if you live in a representative democracy, you want your representatives to go to the state capitol and to do things. And he did it.
Let me get you on a news of the day thing. Governor Cuomo said the other day that given the coronavirus and the last-ditch budget that was passed in the dead of night, that effectively the legislative session is over. Now, it had been scheduled to go until June. Number one, what's left on the table in your mind? And number two, is it a good idea for lawmakers to just fold up the tent here?
Well, the second question is the easiest. The short answer is legislators should come to Albany and do their jobs. And if they have to do it virtually as compared to physically, then that's what they should do. I mean, no one would ask anyone to unnecessarily put their health at risk. But the legislature was able to figure out how to pass a budget under these circumstances. They certainly can deal with legislation. Typically, in a typical legislative session, hundreds of bills get passed, and many of them are issues that lots of people care about. And so NYPARC has across the board agenda of items that we care about, but there are lots of issues all over the place that are not related to the budget that people care a lot about. One of the ones that gets talked about the most is, what do you do about allowing for recreational use of marijuana, for example? And that's been on the table now for a few years in a row. The governor said he wasn't going to do a budget unless it was included. It wasn't. What does that mean? Nothing gets done. So the legislature's scheduled to be here through June. We expect that they will, even if they're going to do it in a new and virtual way.
Governor Cuomo also said today that any New Yorker who wants to vote by absentee ballot in the June 23rd primaries, which are now a combined election day with the April presidential primary moved to June, can do so in order to limit people gathering, you know, to stand in line to vote. Do you think that this pandemic will maybe show us the way to a new statewide mail-in, no-fault absentee situation for elections going forward?
Well, I think the pandemic will accelerate where we were going anyway. I mean, the legislature last year passed a constitutional amendment that eliminated the requirement that you'd have to have an excuse to get an absentee ballot. But since it's a constitutional amendment, it has to have passage of two successive legislatures and then put the voters to decide. The earliest that would have happened, that would have been November 2021. So what the governor is saying today is that he's interpreting one of the allowable excuses in the state constitution, which is illness, to apply to a pandemic. We think he's right to want to do that, and we applaud the governor's taking that step. We certainly hope that that's the case, that New Yorkers don't have to put their health at risk in order to cast their ballot. This is voluntary, of course. People don't have to get an absentee ballot if they don't want to, or in this case, primarily, I assume, Democrats for the presidential. But there are special elections that are included in this, and there are primaries for congressional and state legislative races as well. So there's a number of issues. It really impacts Democrats the most, because most of the primaries, if they occur, will be on the presidential side, although maybe the presidential primary won't be so exciting come June, given that Senator Sanders has bowed out. Nevertheless, we think mail-in voting has an enormous amount of promise as a way to deal with elections going forward, whether you have a pandemic or not. The state of Oregon, which has done this now for many years, has one of the highest voter participation rates in the country. And our view is, it's a constitutional right, it's not a privilege, that government policy should be, how do you make it as easy as possible for people to use their right? And certainly mailing in the ballot is an easy way to do that.
That's Blair Horner. He's executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group and a WAMC commentator. Blair, thank you so much for taking some time for us today. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you.
All right, now let's listen to my interview with Mary Snow from the Quinnipiac University poll. They released a new poll on Wednesday looking at President Trump's performance, Governor Cuomo's, and the federal response to the coronavirus. We also talked about the 2020 campaign.
Some of the big takeaways. Number one, Dr. Anthony Fauci, no partisanship on this question. 78% say they approve of the response, the job he's doing in terms of the coronavirus response. And in so many questions, we see partisanship, but this is across the board. He gets a resounding thumbs up for the job that he's doing. Close behind that, state governor, 74% voters approving of the response by state governors. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo gets a 59% approval rating for his response to coronavirus and how he's handling his job. Remember, this is not a New York poll. This is a national poll where he registered 59%. And you have about 24% saying they don't know enough to say. So a fairly high rating for Governor Cuomo in a national poll. When it comes to President Trump, 46% approve, 51% disapprove of the job he's doing in terms of the coronavirus response. Congress, 44% approve.
How do those numbers compare to Trump's overall job performance?
So President Trump's overall job approval is 45%, which is the highest that he has registered in our polls. The previous high had been 43%. What we've seen in a number of polls since this crisis came out is we have seen small upticks in the president's overall job approval. And what we have seen, it's kind of this rally around the flag effect where we've seen in the past where presidents have seen an increase in their job approval ratings. For example, after September 11th, President Bush had a job approval rating in December of 2001 of about 83%. So that was a very big spike. So we're seeing a small bump in the president's job approval rating. And overall, right now, he has a 45% job approval rating in our poll.
Now, let's talk about how you've actually conducted this poll. This has been such a fast-moving story, coronavirus, and we've been hearing from the president on a daily basis. We've also been hearing from Governor Cuomo on a daily basis, sometimes twice a day. So when were people polled here, and how did you actually do it, given all the restrictions on public life right now?
That's an excellent question, Ian. And with these fast-moving developments, it does pose challenges in terms of just the topics that we're polling on and how drastically everything is changing day by day. Our poll was conducted between April 2nd and 6th, and we had to go to Plan B. We have calling centers at the university where we have normally done our polls for more than 20 years. But because of, you know, social distancing guidelines, we had to change that plan for the very first time in the history of the Quinnipiac University poll, where we had to go to outside call centers where these polls could be conducted safely and remotely. So we still were overseeing all the calls, but we had to do it in a different way.
Let me go back to President Trump for a moment. I saw something interesting before I was getting ready to speak with you. Jonathan Chait, the political writer for New York Magazine, was weighing in on why President Trump's approval ratings have ticked up to, as you say, about their highest level that you've measured so far. And he says it's more of a wish than an expression of confidence because in a disaster, people reinterpret the question. Does that scan with what you're seeing?
You know, that's an interesting concept. It's hard. I will tell you this, though. One of the other questions that was asked specifically about President Trump is whether or not he has acted aggressively enough in his response to the coronavirus. 55% say he has not acted aggressively enough. 41% say his response has been about right. So even though his overall job approval did, you know, bump up a bit higher. Overall, there is more disapproval of the job overall that President Trump is doing and more disapprove of his response to the coronavirus than they do approve.
What about the federal response to major population centers like New York City?
We had a very specific question in this poll about the federal response to New York City, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in New York City. And 59% of voters say that the federal government, they believe that the federal government should be doing more to address the needs of New York City. We did see in this question, there are gaps. There are partisan gaps where we see more Republicans saying that the federal government is doing enough. But overall, 59% say the federal government should be doing more.
Let's talk about the presidential election. Now, as we speak, Bernie Sanders has just dropped out of the race. Presumably, that might affect things in some way in the future. But in this particular poll, it shows Joe Biden outperforming President Trump in a November matchup, right?
It does. There is a head-to-head matchup between former Vice President Joe Biden and President Trump where Biden is up by 8 points. And then on very specific questions, we see that Biden leads Trump when asked, you know, who'd do a better job handling a crisis? Biden up by 9. Who would do a better job handling health care? Biden up by 7. President Trump, though, is holding steady on his grades on the economy. And here, Trump is up by 5 over Biden when it comes to the question of who would do a better job handling the economy.
How's Congress doing?
Overall, mixed grades on Congress when it comes to Congress's response and its handling of to the coronavirus crisis.
I just have a sort of philosophical question for you, and answer it if you want to. You don't have to if you don't want to. We're seeing a lot of states move towards some sort of mail-in option. They're delaying primaries, and then, as we saw yesterday, it seems that the idea of people lining up to vote as they did in Wisconsin is very ill-advised at this point. So have you thought at all at Quinnipiac about how measuring public opinion might be affected or might even look different if we have people not actually physically going to the polls, or if they're going to be voting in races that at one point they thought were in April and now they're in June?
You know, these are issues that are constantly being looked at. We don't have any specific questions in this poll relating to that, but I will point out one thing. While most states have stay-at-home guidelines, 81% of voters say that they would support a stay-at-home order on a national level. To give you an idea of how the public is viewing going out in public. And when it comes to how long they think this crisis will last, they don't see it ending anytime soon. More than 60% say they see it lasting months, not weeks. So how that's just the public perception of the timeline in this. How this all plays out in these specific elections, it's something to, you know, examine, look at, but we don't have any specific questions regarding voting in these primaries or the general election right now.
Last thing I want to ask you about is the economy. Again, as we speak, a lot of experts are saying we are in for some very choppy seas here. What did people say about their outlook on the economy on a national level?
So more than half of voters right now are saying that they think the U.S. is in a recession. And of that number, we're seeing more than 50% expect it to be worse than the Great Recession that began in 2008. So certainly a bleak outlook among voters about the economy. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that while 66% of voters right now view the economy as not so good or poor, that's not a big surprise. But what is worth mentioning is that just a month ago, we saw that reversed. Two-thirds of voters had felt positive about the economy just a month. And it's just that snapshot of just this rapid, drastic change in everything.
Quinnipiac University polling analyst Mary Snow, thank you for taking some time for us. And as we've been saying to everybody, stay safe.
Thank you, Ian. You too. Happy to be with you.
All right. That does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Till next time, stay safe. I'm Ian Pickus.